You're listening to His Time. I'm Andy Bates. It is time to study the daily New Testament reading. Our guest pastor joining us by phone, the Reverend Jacob Heine, pastor at Trinity Lutheran Church in Columbia, Tennessee. Good morning, Pastor Heine.
Good morning, Andy.
I'm thankful to have this time to study God's Word with you today. Looking forward to studying in Luke chapter 2. Tell us about Trinity Lutheran Church in Columbia, Tennessee.
Well, it's great to be back with you. I'm so pleased to be able to do this again. And Trinity is a wonderful congregation located in Middle Tennessee, about an hour south of Nashville. We do all that we can to fulfill God's mission of to know Christ, to make Christ, to serve Christ, and to make Christ known to all. Knowing that that job is certainly a large one, but He's called each of us to serve Him and to love Him and to spread the gospel message of Jesus Christ to the ends of the earth. And so that's our mission here and our little slice of heaven down here in Middle Tennessee.
Well, thanks be to God for the ministry of Trinity Lutheran Church in Columbia, Tennessee, telling that good news of Jesus in the middle of Tennessee. We are in Luke chapter 2 today, verses 41 through 52. Pastor, what would you like for us to know as we prepare to study this text?
Well, this is, I think, one of the a very beloved section of Scripture, but for a lot of people, when they look at it, because it gives us a glimpse into what a lot of people want to know, which is, what was Jesus like as a boy? It's the only piece of Scripture we actually get where we see Jesus as a boy. Previous to this, in Luke chapters 1 and 2, obviously, we just got through the wonderful celebration of Christmas, and we read these texts of the angels and the shepherds and the visit to the manger and what they saw. Then we get into the purification and how they bring Jesus to the temple to be circumcised. And so there's this beautiful picture that plays out, but Luke's the only one that gives us a little bit more of his childhood, his boyhood. But I think sometimes we focus too much on what was Jesus like as a boy that we really miss what this text is about and what it's showing us about Jesus. And I can't wait to study it. Side note, this was the first text I ever wrote a sermon on at the seminary, so it's kind of fun to go back to it now and look at it again after several years of being in the ministry and preaching on different things along the way.
Well, very good. Let's take a look. Luke chapter 2, beginning at verse 41. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up according to the custom. And when the feast was ended, as they were returning, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. His parents did not know it. But supposing him to be in the group, they went a day's journey. But then they began to search for him among the relatives and acquaintances. And when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem searching for him. All right, let's pause there and go back and look at some of these verses here. Verse 41, his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the Feast of the Passover.
Yeah, that command in Deuteronomy that every year the people were supposed to go to celebrate the Passover. I think if I remember my Old Testament history correctly, there were three festivals that the people were supposed to always go to Jerusalem for. The most likely, the people only went for Passover, being that most important festival that celebrated God's deliverance from the hand of slavery, from the hand of oppression of the Egyptians, as the angel of death passed over the people that had the blood of the lamb on their doorposts and yet slaughtered the firstborn of those that did not. And so I think this makes a good connection with the previous text of Jesus and the circumcision. As blood is shed, it kind of foreshadows the cross, just as Passover foreshadowed the cross. Here we have Jesus and his parents doing what they always did. It's every year they did this. They went to Jerusalem to remember what God had done, and it points us forward also looking, even in this Christmas time, already to the cross of Christ and what Jesus is going to do for us there.
So they go to the Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went up according to the custom. And so he's 12 years old. What is there anything significant about this age, about young men at the age of 12?
Well, we know certainly in today's Judaism, and it certainly can be traced back quite a ways, even into the first century and beyond, that kind of 12 years old was that time of the rite of passage. You know, in today's Judaism, it's the bar mitzvah, where they go from being a child to being a man. Here we see that same sort of thing happening where Jesus is now looked at not just as some young boy anymore or some young child, but he's going to start learning the family trade. He's going to start learning all the different things it means to be an Israelite boy, a Hebrew boy, and all the things more so to be a Hebrew and Israelite man. And so there's a significance there as that 12-year mark kind of marks that. I know a lot of people can't imagine their 12-year-olds being considered adults today, but that would certainly have been the case then. And always interesting to note in this section, too, is the word up. Even though they may have had to come down from Nazareth, you always go up to Israel because that's where the temple is and that's where the place of God's residing with man would be up at the temple. And so you always go up to God. And that's a significant thing as Jesus is going to the temple once again for the second time that we know of, and he's going up to take his rightful place as the true temple. And that's a theme throughout all of Luke.
So when the feast ended, as they were returning, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. His parents did not know it, but supposing him to be in the group, they went a day's journey, but they began to search for him among the relatives and acquaintances. And they didn't find him. They decided to go back. They returned to Jerusalem searching for him.
Yeah, can you imagine that?
No.
You know, in today's day and age, if we left a child behind, DCS would be called on any one of us. But in those days, it was very common. I think it's a misconception that we have because of our 21st century ways of doing things. So, you know, we always know where our kids are. We travel together. It's a very close-knit group. We would never think of our kids running out and doing something without us knowing where they are. And even when I was growing up, you know, my mom would kick us out of the house in the morning and, you know, wave goodbye in the summer, and we'd come back for lunch when those street lights came on at night. But nowadays, I can't imagine doing that with my kids. But, you know, for them, it was a family thing. Mm-hmm. You know, this wasn't just Joseph and Mary and Jesus headed down to Jerusalem. This would have been, you know, all sorts of people coming from Nazareth, lots of extended family, cousins, maybe even John the Baptist in this group because he was a cousin and living in the same sort of area. You know, so we maybe even some of the disciples, as younger children could have been in this group as they're playing together and they're running together and they're having this great time. And so, you know, you wouldn't think about it. Yeah, Jesus is with Aunt so-and-so, or Jesus is over with his cousins, or Jesus is doing this. So for Mary and Joseph, this isn't an unusual thing to say, okay, let's head off. He's got to be in the group and, you know, settle down at night to you know, build the tent, build the fire, get something to eat, and realize he's not here. And that's when the panic starts setting in. And that's when they start running to all the relatives and all the friends. Hey, have you seen him? Have you seen him? Was he with you? You know, we set out. We thought he was here. And that's when that panic sets in and they have to reverse course and head back. And I think that, you know, we want to judge and say, how could that ever happen? But we forget what cultural norms have changed over the last 2,000 years and over the last couple of millennia as we look at that. So that's always an interesting thing to point out.
So anything else up through verse 45 before we go on to the next section?
Yeah, I was just looking that over to see if there's anything that stands out to me. And I think the thing that I love this phrase in verse 43, where it says his parents did not know it. He stayed in Jerusalem, but his parents did not know that. But I think that stands out as to the routineness of what had happened to them in probably the last 12 years. You know, certainly they had the miraculous visits of the angels prior to his birth during the incarnation and the direction of what that would mean. They had the visit of the shepherds who had seen the angels and they came and worshiped. They had the visit of the Magi at some point and the story of the star that they followed and the warning to flee to Egypt and then to come back. But at some point, I think the routineness of their lives set in. Jesus being just a good boy, didn't get in trouble, didn't really do anything, didn't draw attention to himself. I think the apocryphal stories of how Jesus, you know, would kill an animal and raise it just to show his power, you know, it's just silly because most likely Jesus was just a boy who had fun and played and helped out at home. And I think they forgot And I think that phrase, "his parents did not know it," stands out as that idea, you know, that's kind of gotten into things and how we do it sometimes too, that we just take Jesus for granted. He's always there. When life's going along really well, we don't think about who he really is and what he's done for us. It's not until we get desperate and scared or something goes wrong where we turn and realize who he really is.
Verse 46, after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. And when his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us so? Behold, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress." We'll get to his response here in just a little bit. So after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking questions.
Yeah, isn't that great? There's so many pieces just in that verse. The first thing we encounter there is the 3 days. And if that doesn't send us forward to the resurrection, I don't know what does. But when we put that in context of what's gone on, we've got, you know, the story right before this of his circumcision where his blood is shed for the first time in that ritual of becoming part of the nation of Israel. And his journey into becoming the one true man, being Israel reduced to one. And then, then we get the Passover celebration, the shedding of the blood for the forgiveness of sins, the shedding of blood for redemption, the shedding of blood for salvation. And now it's 3 days. And that pushes us forward. We can imagine, Jesus is lost. Jesus is gone. All hope is lost. What have we done? Where do we go now? It's the same thing the disciples felt. The same thing Mary would feel again in 30-some years or 20-some years when she watches her son die. And 3 days later, there he is, alive again. And I can imagine she'd put those two pieces together, which is just, so incredible that Luke puts that right there. And then he's sitting amongst the teachers. Who exactly were these teachers? Were these the rabbis? Luke uses the word didaskalos, which just means teacher. Were they Pharisees? Were they scribes? Who were, we're not entirely sure, but we know that they're teaching. And they're listening to it, and he's listening to them, and he's asking them questions, just like a good rabbi would do. That pattern that we've learned from teaching, that sometimes the best way to teach is to ask a question and make someone else think about it. And we see Jesus doing that a lot in his ministry, but he already was starting it here as a 12-year-old boy when he's coming into adulthood and coming into that place in his life, and he's already starting to ask questions. What does this mean sort of thing? It's almost the small catechism question. What does this mean? Tell me more about this. If the Old Testament says this about the Messiah, what is that going to mean? And, this certainly shows us Isaiah's prophecy in chapter 11, verse 2, where he talks about how the Messiah is going to be one with wisdom and understanding. And here we go. Jesus already at 12 is showing us who the Messiah is. He's one with wisdom. He's one with understanding. He's one that's pointing us forward to what the Messiah will do, which is suffer, die, and rise again.
And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers.
Which for us doesn't seem like it's too far-fetched. I think, again, this is where we get tripped up. I said a little bit earlier, sometimes how we get tripped up in this story. So we focus so much in on Jesus as a boy and what that means. But I think this is starting to show us a little bit more of what this text really wants us to understand, and that is Jesus as both man and God, and that he was man and God from the very beginning. It's not like Arian, who he was adopted at baptism, or any of our other heresies. This is showing that Jesus Christ was true God and true man from the moment of his incarnation. And so here we see him doing that, and the people are starting to be awed by this. And it's a pattern we'll see throughout the entire gospel as the people hear Jesus and they can't believe what they're hearing. He teaches with one with power and authority. He teaches with wisdom and understanding. And here he is already, the 12-year-old boy, showing that he is truly that God-man in ways that we can't even comprehend sometimes.
And when his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us so? Behold, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress."
Yeah, isn't that, they're also astonished by him. They knew the prophecy. They knew who he was. They had the visits. They had the angel message. You know, their lives had been changed, and yet even now, as they're starting to see who he, you know, what this really means, they're astonished and probably slightly hurt too. You know, why didn't you tell us you were here? Why didn't you say something? We've been searching. We've been, and that word there, that great distress, that great anguish that they had, which is also was foreshadowed by Simeon and Anna. It's going to be, and the angel telling about the birth of Christ. This is also, you know, what's going to happen again, you know, with the disciples, you know, and with Mary on that day of his crucifixion and resurrection. Where have you been? We've been searching, you know, that deep wrenching of pain when you've lost something, and that searching that they've done looking for what's next. What do we hold on to?
We need to take a quick break. When we come back from that break, we'll continue our discussion, find out what his response is, and talk more about that. We're studying the Daily New Testament reading with Pastor Jacob Heine from Trinity Lutheran Church in Columbia, Tennessee. We're in Luke chapter 2 today. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
The Legacy Project is a coalition of sinner saints like you on a sojourn for the gospel. We tend the narrative of the gospel through a vibrant web presence, a top-shelf publishing house, a world-class speakers bureau, local radio ministry, and an international podcast. We need your support. Check us out at 1517legacy.com. Stand with us.
Hi, I'm Cornel Kenny, a senior at Lutheran High School North in St. Louis. A good education opens doors. Because of my college prep training at Lutheran North, I'm set up for success in college and throughout the rest of my life. More importantly, my school has helped to grow my faith, giving me the foundation for lifelong Christian service and leadership. Have you checked out Lutheran schools lately? Learn more at lhsnstl.org. That's lhsnstl.org.
Listening to His Time, I'm Andy Bates. We're studying God's Word with Pastor Jacob Heine from Trinity Lutheran Church in Columbia, Tennessee. We're in Luke chapter 2 today. Pastor Heine, anything else up through verse 48 before we go on to 49 about Jesus being lost? Well, his parents thinking he's lost. He's asking questions and sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking questions at the temple, and his mother almost scolding him, "Why have you treated us so? Your father and I have been searching for you in great distress." And now we're about ready to go on to Jesus' response. But before that, anything else about his mother's concerns?
You know, I think it goes back to one, maybe her complacency in the daily life of how things have settled out for her, and she's gotten used to who Jesus is. I also think it shows the true love of both Mary and Joseph for Jesus. That even knowing that he is the Son of God, that there's this deep love and connection. Even Joseph, your father, I mean, he identifies as his earthly father and the one who cares for him and takes care of him. And there's that feeling of, you know, how could you do this to us? Even if they were to understand what he was doing and where he was, I think there would still be that, how could you do this to me, God, sort of thing. Because we do that sometimes too. We know who God is. We know who he is for us. And yet we still sometimes have that struggle. How could you do this? Because we don't understand God's ultimate and full plan. The other piece I was thinking about during the break really briefly was this idea of searching. They're searching. They're searching. How many times do we hear somebody say, I'm looking for God, I'm searching for God? And I think Jesus' answer here in the next verse is going to give us the answer of what that really means.
Verse 49, and he said to them, "Why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my Father's house?" And they did not understand the saying that he spoke to them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was submissive to them. And his mother treasured up all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. Why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my Father's house?
Yeah, that one's another loaded phrase, my Father's house. Because in the Greek, it could read my Father's business or being about the things of my Father as well. So it can go several different ways, and each having an important theological meaning. You know, that idea, when he says, why were you looking for me? Didn't you know where I would be? Didn't you know where you could find me? And I think that's something that, we need to remember as Christians. When we're wandering around thinking, looking for God, where can I find God? I hear that, I could find God in the woods, or I could find God in the golf course, or I could find God anywhere. But really, God is found in the place where we worship, in the place where the word is proclaimed, and the sacraments are rightly administered. Certainly, God can show up anywhere. He's God. He can do whatever he wants. But he's made a promise that he will always be where his word is preached and the sacraments are rightly administered. And so when we're wondering, where do I find God? The answer is in his house, in worship, in that moment where he comes to us truly in, with, and under the bread and wine and through the waters of baptism. And so, that's a beautiful thing. Well, we're searching, just as Mary and Joseph were searching here. The real answer is there's no reason to search. We know where to find God. We know where to find Christ, and that's where we should be going. And then there's this idea of, my Father's work or my Father's business. Didn't you know I'm going to be about my Father's work or my Father's business? He already, from, 12 years old and probably before that, but certainly here we're told explicitly, he knew what he had come for. There was no question. There wasn't him in the Garden of Gethsemane praying, let this cup be taken from me, because somehow he was surprised that this came to him. Now, Jesus knew from day one, from his incarnation, from before his incarnation when he was with the Father, from the beginning of all time, when Adam and Eve fell, he knew the plan. He knew what he was supposed to be about. And he's reminding Mary and Joseph, just as he reminds all of us, I've got a job to do. I came for a purpose, and that purpose is the salvation of all mankind. And so, when we're seeking and wondering what God's will is, and what God is doing, God's seeking the restoration of all mankind to him through the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And we see that already here in Luke chapter 2 very explicitly, though we can find it even before now, but extremely explicitly in this verse, in the first words that Jesus ever speaks.
And they did not understand the saying that he spoke to them.
And that's you and I once again. We can read ourselves into the text here. How often do we read these things and say, I don't get it? I love teaching the parables. So often we read the parables and say, well, what does this really mean? And that was the disciples, that was the Pharisees and scribes. What does this mean? And even when they did get it, they didn't like the answer most of the time. And I think that's the same thing that's happening here. They don't understand it. But I think in some ways, because we're not given any more, so we're going to read into the text a little bit. But I think because we're not given any more, there's that understanding of Jesus is doing something we don't understand. And so we take him back in, we take him back home, and life goes on. And then again, we don't see him again for 15 more years. And so I think that there's a little bit of that going on. But I think it really points to us not fully understanding sometimes who Jesus is and what he's really come to do, and the need to continue to come back to my Father's house and my Father's business.
And he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was submissive to them, and his mother treasured up all these things in her heart. He increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man.
Yeah, and so we note again here, now they're going down from Jerusalem. So they've left the temple. They've left the place where God is supposedly to reside at the mercy seat on the Ark of the Covenant inside the most holy place. And so now they go down to Jerusalem or to Nazareth, even though they have to go north. And but I love this line. And he was submissive to them, understanding his role. He is their son, and he is supposed to listen and do as they instruct. And so there's a wonderful connection there with the fourth commandment. You know, honor your father and mother. And he does that. He shows us exactly what that means, to be submissive. And I love the word submissive or submit in the Greek, because it just means to be placed in order underneath. He understands his role right now is under them, and to obey them and to do the things that they ask. And so he does. And he goes willingly. And he's submissive and does all that he's supposed to. And then we get this. And his mother, Mary, treasured up all these things in her heart, which I think, and I've read a few different things on this, but I think this really points to how Luke was that scholar to research all these things. You know, it really shows that, because he most likely talked to Mary himself, and she was one of those eyewitnesses he talks about in Luke chapter 1. And so here, you know, she's treasuring up all these things as a remembrance, who he is, what he did. And so she recalls that to him. And so probably this story is directly a remembrance of Mary's, of what happened, and how this informed her, maybe not at the time as much, but certainly afterward, as she looked back on it after Christ's death and resurrection and ascension into heaven, and what this really meant as it pointed forward to the rest of his life.
Looking over the text as a whole today, Pastor, anything else you would have us learn from this?
Yeah, I think the important piece for us in this section, and like I said, it's such a beloved one, because we get a glimpse into Jesus as a boy, and it helps us understand that Jesus was a regular boy in some ways. You know, he probably played with his friends and his relatives, and he was submissive. He understood what it was to obey even the earthly authority, even though he's God, he's man. And so he's 100% God. He's 100% man. And so the deep theology of this text that points us to Jesus as 100% God, 100% man, and how he is the one who was to come. And it points us forward so much to the crucifixion and resurrection that this text can't be separated from it. And you know, I understand why a lot of times in lectionary series it's put, you know, here in the Christmas season, but I think sometimes it would be great to read in Lent as well, because of those connections with Passover, with you know, the spreading of blood, with the 3 days, with the searching and the locating, and all that comes together in a beautiful picture of Jesus Christ as the incarnate Son of God who came for us and was for us from the very beginning.
We've been studying the Daily New Testament Reading with Pastor Jacob Heine from Trinity Lutheran Church in Columbia, Tennessee. Pastor Heine, thanks for being our guest pastor, helping us study this Luke 2 text today.
Well, thank you for having me again, Andy. This is always a joy, and I enjoy this time of studying God's Word with you.
Most certainly. It was a joy to study with you as well today. God bless you and all the saints there at Trinity Lutheran Church in Columbia, Tennessee. Coming up in just a little bit more, His Time to Sanctify Your Morning. You're listening to the Messenger of Good News, Worldwide KFUO.